everybody. Welcome to a very special edition here at Well Read Magazine. So normally I do Annie Asks, but I decided for February to ask Mandy if we could have a special edition about Owen and Jeff. And she jumped right on it. It was very organic. So it's really special edition, Once Upon a Friendship, because it's like storytelling. And they had each other at Hello, which they truly did. They met coming to a beach. They met coming to one of my events, a beach party event. And they were like on opposite ends. And they just were like, you know, they became really good friends. There was like 10 people in the room at the same time. And it was really cool watching their friendship blossom. You could tell they were friends. So I want to talk about for February is all about couples, but it's also about friendship, but it's usually about female friendship. So I wanted to discuss, you know, male friendship, men that are friends and how they become friends and what makes them friends. So I just find it very interesting. You're both, they do say that if you want to be friends, like if men want to be friends, a lot of times they have to be in the same exact industry. So what I found very interesting is that while you are, you're also a little not, but you are, but you're a little not because you don't write the same genres and all of that at all. Very different genres. So I'm just wondering if you could tell me and everybody, what do you think makes a friendship begin? And, you know, you just hit it off so well that then Owen joined, because first the show was just the page to screen scoop was just you and I, Jeff. And then we added Owen because you guys were just so organically connected. It would be stupid, really, to not have him on the show because he was almost like the glue, right?
I've been called that before and worse.
No, but like you really are. And you two are both so wonderful together as friends. And I really love that. I love watching it. I love seeing it. And that's why I always say, oh, you two should do a show together. And then I forgot that you did. I was like, they're really great communicators. They're great friends. We know this happens a lot behind the scenes with people. A lot of people interview on these types of shows, but they don't remain friends. Like Jeff would say the best accolades about you, and you do the same for him. So I'm trying to just get at, we all talk about friendship as girls, like no problem. So I'm just wondering, what is it like for men?
Well, I can tell about my experience.
Thank you.
Talking over Jeff. That's what I'm basically, that's the basis of our friendship, talking over each other and not letting the other one speak. That is that's very important.
Well,
that's
just
kind of the rocker built on, really. yeah, that's about my experience of it. Yeah,
look, it's the same cross gender. It's for me, it's admiration and respect. If I don't admire somebody, I don't know what I'm doing there, and I try and only hang out with. And that sounds really snobby, but anyway. I tell everybody, you know, hang out with people you admire, because that's going to, it's going to raise your game too. But also, you know, if you're around, if you're in mud, you're going to get muddy. If you're, you know, if you're in fresh air, your clothes are going to smell like fresh air. So, you know, if you're around people who have qualities that you admire, you're probably taking on those qualities to be in rapport with them. And that's a good thing. It feels good. So, what did I admire about him? He's a young dad. He's got young kids. He's using writing as a way to put food on the table, and he took the chances, and I did all that. You know, I'm on the other end of that, but I did all that. And so I really respected that. Plus, you know, He lives in a part of Pennsylvania that I grew up very close to, so I was able to recommend Stromboli off camera to a good
place. Yes.
You two, you keep talking. My husband's knocking.
Okay. So, plus now that Annie's not there, you know, Owen gives me money. And
I do. Very, very small amount, but it's a lot to him.
It's enough. I moved to a larger place and the rent is, yes, I need money.
Pittance to me, but to you, it's a lot.
I think the thing that also binds us is Annie. No kidding.
Oh, very much.
She brings out the part of you that wants to be nice and wants to be good. So we figured, you know, we're doing this for you. So we only like each other because of you. If somebody else interviewed us, we'd probably
be. You were there, we'd be toast. Yeah.
So male friendships are don't get a lot of credit. It's usually just frat boys and bromances and talking about how did the playoffs go and all that stuff. And to tell you the truth, when guys are talking about sports and stuff like that, it is bonding. It's not emotionally raw revealing, but it's bonding. It's how they do it. But I have friends that we talk about stuff. We talk about when stuff hurts, we talk about what hurts. Stuff makes us happy, we talk about that. But it's not just, how did the Cowboys do?
Badly, thankfully.
Always hopefully. I don't know why I picked the Cowboys, but we always hope that the Cowboys will do badly. in fact, I hate the New York Giants, but there's only two things that I asked the Giants to do every year, and that was beat Dallas, and they wouldn't. So made me hate them even more. So anyway, that right there, male stuff went back and forth right now that women would just not even recognize. But what we just, so there's that. But also, I have friends that women would be amazed to hear the stuff that we talk about because they don't think that we do. And Owen and I, off camera when we've had these, breaks and stuff, we've talked about stuff that probably is a little too private to share with, your whole audience and stuff. We were talking about the sales of our books and, I'd be frank on both our behalf. We are both disappointed in the sales and our books. That's not an easy thing to say to anybody. We're supposed to go, no, that's doing great. Picking up this and that, loving it. No, I'm not happy with the sales of my book compared to what the potential I think of it was. And I know, and Owen, my favorite book of his is the one that isn't about Nazis. It doesn't mean that I don't like the Nazi ones, but this was Owen, there was more Owen in that book.
There was.
It meant something to you and I got to know you a little bit. And so to me, a personal story like that, but it also had action. It also had suspense. You didn't know what was going to happen. It had everything that the Nazi books had, except for this overwhelming death threat every minute. But to me, that should have been the bestseller. And so, I'm hanging him out to dry right now, but we both were sharing our disappointment about the sales as opposed to what we hope for them. And that is not a thing that guys generally feel safe doing with each other.
I think there's a vulnerability there's a vulnerability that some men are a little bit reluctant to share, possibly. I think it's a good friend that you can reveal fears and vulnerabilities to. For instance, I had a conversation with one of my very best mates back home. He called me up because we had a really, really frank conversation about life and being 46-year-old men with kids and all this and how difficult it can be and the pressures. And I told him a story I heard recently about a guy that I knew. I didn't know him well. And unfortunately, my age and the pressures of being mid-40s and got to him and he killed himself. He committed suicide just a few days ago.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no, I didn't know him well. He was an Irish guy. I met him I spoke to him like five times, but I spoke to him for about 20 minutes each time, all of the five times, And it was really shocking. Yeah, and in New York. Yeah, terrible. And so I think getting away from that depressing topic, I think it's, if you can talk to someone who had vulnerabilities, and I wondered about him because being Irish, friendship is a really big part of our culture. I've heard I've seen statistics about American men in particular, right? And as being a foreigner coming to America, I have noticed American men might not be as into having friends as Irish men are, and our culture just is. Like, we make the, my friend I was talking to an hour ago, I've known him since I was literally 3 years of age, and he was best man at my wedding, I was best man at his, blah blah blah. And the culture we have and the closest never really changed for like 20, 25 years. And we've always had that. And we talk about when we're old men sitting around together with the group of guys, you know, with the same people. And but you see statistics and like 20% of American men don't have like any friends. I remember like seeing a stand up on Saturday Night Live saying his father doesn't have any friends whatsoever. And like,
yeah,
it was really
There's a lot going around now about male loneliness.
Yeah,
stories and it's a big thing. And you know, you're not, if look, you're taught, I mean, this is a big cliche. You're taught don't cry. If you're hurt, you're supposed to shake it off. And so to admit that you're lonely, that's a tough one. You got to be careful.
Or that you're sad.
And I think, I know women are this way, but I know men, you know, going back to the original DNA and, you know, competing for what we always thought were scarce resources and everything, you know, it was that big commercial, never let them see you sweat. You're not allowed to let someone else know you've got a weakness because they can exploit that against you. And that's just primal. That's just jungle shit. But we all have that in us. So, you know, there's always a part that wants to be careful. That, oh my gosh, if I show a weakness, well, they're just gonna come in and steal my woman, you know, it's like, or anything, just steal, you know, you cannot show weakness. So you're not allowed to say, I'm not happy with the sales of my book. You're not allowed to say, I'm not happy with the publicist. You're not allowed to say with, you're not allowed to say, I'm disappointed and it hurts. You know, I mean, I've spoken in front of groups and, you know, I mean, I'm speaking in front of the group rather than being in the audience because of, you know, what I've been able to achieve and everything. But there's this myth that shit stops hurting once you've, you know, broken through or had, you know, had a hit or had, you know, had success at any level, that shit just stops hurting. And I've had to stand there in front of, like, look, I still hear no from people. I hear still more than yes. And, you know, yeah, shit hurts. And I would look at like 200 stunned faces. Like, how can anything hurt? You know, you've had a hit movie. Stuff hurts. It does. And to be able to, I'm not interested in having the kind of friends that I can't say that to. I mean, I don't walk around leading with that stuff. I just talked to a guy that I've known since the first day of college, more than 50 years ago. And, you know, we were doing a FaceTime, even though we talk, you know, online and stuff, but it's been a long time since we've actually seen each other. And I made some crack. I've just gone through a divorce and I made the typical crack about, you know, how expensive it was and all that stuff. And then at just one point I said, but you know, man, it sucked. And he just right away, he knew it. He goes, yeah, I know. But just to be able to say, you know, you can say the jokes, you can say this, you can say that, but it sucks. And to be able to say that to a guy that we've been through incredible adventures together, incredible, you know, foxhole moments where that was the only guy you could trust. And, you know, a life, you know, they're part of the tapestry of your life, these old friends. And Owen, the guy since he was 3, my 2 closest friends in the world I met one when I was 7 and one, I knew him before I knew it because our mothers were best friends and they used to push us around in strollers together. That's how long I've known him. And when shit gets hard, you know, I don't talk about sports with them. So what makes it is a trust. I mean, the ability to trust another person that they're not going to use what you just told them against you, that you're opening a window and saying, I don't want anything, you know, I'm just going to open this window and trust that nothing from outside is going to crawl in. It takes a certain amount of trust, and we've also been betrayed.
Correct. You're right, though. You're right. That is a primeval instinct, isn't it? We're getting pretty deep here. But it's a primeval instinct of if you reveal any weakness, like, don't show any weakness because it will be used against you. And I suppose what we're talking about is people we've known so long, we know they'd absolutely, you know, to use a borrow phrase from Good Will Hunting, take a bat to someone else's head for us, you know?
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's from Good Will Hunting.
Well, that's the Irish, so, for a couple, you know, then it's the bad omen.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm Jewish. Yeah. We just call our lawyer, but you guys got to go.
Well, whatever works.
I would like to point out that what before you get into your little your primal mode, I do want to mention.
Take my shirt off, by the way.
Yeah,
I can see you've changed enough.
I have. I've changed. Yeah,
this is a podcast with three lot.
I mean, you've changed genres, everything. No, before you get into the primal part of the conversation, I do want to lighten the mood for just a second, because when I first met Owen, one of the things that I loved about in his bio was how, oh, I did this because I wanted to meet a girl. And then I played rugby because I wanted to meet a girl, girls, but I wasn't good at it. So then I did this because I wanted to meet a girl. And I love like his raw honesty in the wanting to meet the girl, but also like, and I wasn't good at that. So then I did this and I was, or whatever, or I didn't meet a girl. So then I did this. And now he has Jill and children and he's an author and doing everything he loves. And it's just wonderful. And well, then
we all did it to meet girls. I mean,
it's interesting.
We all, look, or, you know, if we're, or boys, but we all, you know, in our case, we did it to meet
or
girls.
Or boys. Yes. And I understand.
The thing is, you know, the feathers that we had when I was growing up, if you wanted to be a hero, if you wanted to get women's attention, you could either be a sports hero or a war hero, a soldier, or I guess, you know, a hero of industry. You know, you could have a lot of, you know, a big company or something. And then when the Beatles came and the music invasion, I went, oh my God, I can be a hero playing a guitar. And, you know,
we see.
And so those of us who didn't get into music, you know, there were the arts. And so
I tried that, by the way. I tried the music.
So did I. I'm not any better than I was when I started. In
11th grade. I play drums.
I mean, those are the feathers that we have. And every animal, look at any nature film, everything has a way of showing itself and getting noticed by the opposite sex. You know, we can puff up our chest and do that throat thing, or the peacock feathers, you know.
Oh, I'd like to try the throat thing.
So, yeah, you know, it'd be cool to kind of.
Jill, what you think of this?
I got the
room. You too, so fun.
So
the jowls,
I got, you know, it's like space available. It's like to be built on, developed land.
That's what attracts us for sure.
So, you know, it's not so surprising, but yeah, almost anybody that got into the arts, look, they didn't do it to meet women if they weren't good at it. You had to have an affinity for
but
it.
But I mean that he was so honest. I love. And he met a girl. So honest.
The story of meeting my wife's a big long one. That's for another time. It's a big long one.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it. The last time we had a little interview chat, kind of went long, but it was everybody's favorite, by the way.
Good.
We found out that Jeff, he learned that the Empire State Building had been lit up, I think, in Yankee colors. Is that correct?
It was lit up blue and white when the Yankees beat the Dodgers in 1977 or 78, and I happened to be in New York, and I was a Dodger fan. It made me really mad. And then later that same trip, it was Halloween, and it was lit up orange. And I got it in my head, wow, they can change the colors on that building according to what they want to do. That was in the 70s. So I don't know, 15 or so years later, from 78 to 1990, when I got the idea for Sleepless, I just went, you know what? I'm going to get them to light that thing up pink. And everybody's going to wonder, why is the Empire State Building pink? And the news shows, you know, it's going to be instant publicity for a movie that was only shooting at that. So I had the whole thing lined up, and I was going to get them to light it up pink. And then in the script, I think what we were going to try and do is coordinate with the building to get them to light up just hearts, you know, have enough windows light up to make the shape of a heart. And we were really close to getting permission to do that. But at the time, big blast from the past. Leona Helmsley owned the Empire State Building, and I think she was in jail for something, and she wasn't going to get permission. So they did it on computer. It was, I mean, if you look at the movie now, it's the most elementary form of computer, and, you know, getting that hard on that building. But this summer, when it was the 30th anniversary of the release of the movie, they did light up the Empire State Building pink, and they lit up the Space Needle, you know, 30 years later. So
Space Needle too. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, they had this thing.
I didn't know that.
We're going to celebrate it in both cities. And it's just like, oh my God, this is 30 years.
Yeah.
Did you go to one of them?
No, I didn't go to any of them.
no, he walked his dog. Make sure he didn't get eaten by coyotes.
Okay.
I'm too busy fighting them.
That's an event.
That was an event, and it was a big
because
deal.
Like,
it was in the newspapers, and you know, whatever. It was like media covered the thing, and it just blew me away. Because when I said that, I mean, I guess I could have been in Kazakhstan or something, but when I wrote that movie, I couldn't have been further from the business. You know, and I wasn't just starting at zero, starting behind zero, because I'd already failed publicly. So to have that be your comeback thing, you know, a story that nobody was going to make because it's a love story where the people don't meet, and to go all the way from that to, you know, they're going to meet, they're going to be on the last page. It's going to be on the Empire State Building, and I'm going to light that sucker up, and it all happened.
Cool. Creativity.
I think it's so cool.
I mean. Listen, I sat there in an office in a little town in Virginia and wearing socks with my feet up on the desk writing these words, and just the pure belief that if I did this right, it was going to happen. And I just couldn't accept any other possibility. And, you know, it wasn't just so much me. I mean, it's one of these things where this happened because the stars lined up so that it would. I was an instrument. You know, I was like the first guy, but it took a lot more people after me. And I think that the things that come out that are really special are also that way. That the super special things that we remember are also in some way, you know, divinely inspired. So I was able to be a piece of one of those. That's all.
I think that that's what's so wonderful is that, like, you both started with, like, these seeds as writers, let's say, with these seeds of like why you wanted, like what was the initial seed is so interesting. And to me, I feel that that's part of like why your camaraderie was so good, because your seeds were very similar in different ways, obviously.
Yeah.
But they were similar. Right. And so when you meet, it's like almost like serendipitous, right? Because you kind of have, you do, whether you write different genres, screenwriter, author, whatever you're doing, it's all coming from a place of heart. And that's what I think is so important about it. And you both have really big hearts. I mean, you both really do. And you both, it comes across how you want to teach people, you want to talk to people, you want to befriend people, be friends, but then organically together, you're just so magically delicious. Like that's like the only way I could put it, and it's true. I get the notes about it. I get the messages. Jeff and Owen. Oh my God, Jeff and Owen. And together they're so wonderful, you know, on screen. And you really are when you're talking together. It's one, you know, you have to understand, most of these book clubs are full of women. So for them to see two men be such great friends, because they can see it. You don't have to say, oh, we're good friends. And it doesn't mean you talk every day, you're best friends like that. It's just when you're together, your friendship shines. And I think that that's so cool. I love that about the two of you. And so back to the caveman part of it, maybe it does all start with that. you know, maybe it does all start with that. But I really think it starts with.
I think meeting. It can be as deep or as shallow as you want to be about these things.
Yeah,
like, can.
You know,
it could be just it could, exactly. You know, it could be yeah, we like each other. Big deal.
I'm trying to say
it is a big deal, and that's why I want to celebrate it for February. I want to celebrate the two of you for showing what friendship could be like. Because when I went to look up what on earth questions could I bring up with Jeff and Owen in regards to this, what can I do to create a conversation? Do you know every article about men was how they have no friends and how men can find male friends and how they can be better male friends? And it was all articles like that.
Yeah, there is a bit of a rash of that going around at the moment. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I found it very shocking.
As a kid, I always had my friend, you know, as one of those 50s kids who, you know, you could just go out on your bike as long as you're home before dark. And I lived in a neighborhood where 90% of my friends were in the same, like, 10-block by 4-block grid, and I could get to any of their houses. So, like those two guys I told you about, I'm still friends with them. Those were who I rode bikes with every day. And, you know, an ever growing circle, because it was a community. And, so I've always had friends. I've always had both male and female friends. The whole Harriet Sally thing, I don't get it. I've got a ton of female friends that I'm not sleeping with, don't want to sleep with, never did. You know, I don't get why this has to be such a big deal about it.
True.
But still a great movie. But some people, you know, the shallow is like, okay, no big deal. But the on the other end of that, you know, there are theories that we've known each other for 50 lifetimes. And, you know,
True. Those
big things, you know, you recognize somebody, or if it's love at first sight with someone else, it probably wasn't first sight. You know, if it's a real thing, it, you know, there are theories that we sort of go through every lifetime with the same crew.
Oh, I like that.
And we find the same kind of people in every incarnation that we have. And so Owen always, every form that Owen ever was, male, female, earthling, planetary, whatever,
coyote.
We're there.
There was a Jeff, and there was a you know,
a coyote.
My new spirit animal.
No, I'd be the wolf, and I'd give you the pee to keep away.
My popular demand. You know, yes. What they don't know is that off camera we were talking about my adventure.
Yeah. You just leave a little pocket outside your house.
You're giving out secrets. You're terrible, Owen.
I should go get the gallon jug of granulated wolf urine that I have to
unbelievable
glamorous life, you know. I'll be
now we know what to get you for Hanukkah.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm gonna take one of those World War II things from one of his books and get one of those things where you just sit there and,
you know, there you go,
don't mess with my dog,
shooting
Pete, you know, just
oh my god.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Emerson College in Boston.
Oh, okay.
I learned how to make movies. I wasn't interested in a college education. I got like a, it was the early 70s, and I got around a lot of the rules and just took nothing but film and TV courses from the very first day. And I didn't do the 2 years of taking all the bullshit you don't want to take so that you can take one elective when you're a junior. So I got a trade school education. I learned how to make movies and TV shows and stage plays.
Cool.
And that's what Adam's doing.
I didn't learn literature. I didn't, you know, all the stuff that writers, you know, were supposed to learn. I did mythology, all the stuff that would have made me
mythology. That's,
you know, a better writer. Because I didn't know that I was going to do writing. I wanted to make, you know, physically make movies. I got out of college and I was already a really working director of photography and lighting guy for movies in Boston. But I didn't want to make movies in Boston. I wanted to make them out here.
You wouldn't want to, you know, you would have been the other Gone Girl.
Well, I would have been freezing. I would have been swearing. I would have been filled with anger and hatred for the environment. And I would have been making documentaries and educational films, and there's just nothing wrong with those. But I didn't grow up on documentaries and education. I grew up on Hollywood movies, and that's where I saw that they made the most impact. So I wanted to make Hollywood movies, and they weren't making those in Boston. So I came out here at 22 to do that.
That's amazing.
And have you been living in Los Angeles since you were 22?
No, I lived when I was 27. I went back east for 1 year to get married, and that year turned into like 11 while I was back
east. That was in Pennsylvania, right?
Coming back and forth a lot. And then when I sold Sleepless, I was going back and forth so much that I could actually just say, you know what, I cannot. I mean, 1 month I went three times from you know, Dulles Airport to LAX, and I had two tiny little kids, and it's like I couldn't, can never promise them you're coming home. You know, I mean, daddy's going away, and it was terrible. I hated leaving them, and I come out to California, and I hated leaving California. So I figured, well, I can't bring the business to the East Coast, so I'm going to bring the family to the West. So I came back a second time, and that was exactly 30 years ago right now. So,
okay. Oh, wow.
So I lived, you know, in my 20s, and then I spent most of my 30s back east, and then commuting, and then boom, came out here 30 years ago, and you know, that's it. I mean, Southern California, I don't want to be anywhere else. Never did. Really never did.
No, London, you're a California boy.
The stork knew that I was, it dropped me off in Pennsylvania for some kind of training or foraging or whatever, but yeah. It was get the hell out. I'm not an East Coast kid.
Okay.
I mean, I am, but.
I mean, you, I think you do well at Martha's Vineyard area.
I did okay. Yeah, I had that place in Cape Cod, and I stayed there for 2 years during the pandemic.
Oh, that's what it was, Cape Cod. That was real.
You know, it was great, but it was still putting on layer after layer after layer of clothing and swearing. And it was different that time because I wasn't going to school. I wasn't going to a job. I didn't have to get in the car and go anywhere. So that makes a big difference. But still, it was winter, and as gorgeous and raw and incredible as it was still cold. It was still, you know, sticks instead of leaves on trees and gray and what it looks like
today. Is it weather alone or people too?
It's both. You know, the East Coast people it's really intense. It's really aggressive. I have no problem with how laid back everything is out here. I mean, not so much anymore because so many people are out here from the East. But, you know, when you come from Boston and New York, where this was the 70s and things were not good. I mean, this is when Times Square was the way it was, you know, not
taxi driver.
You know, those were not good times. And in Boston or New York, and they were both really depressed, and they were both dangerous, and they were both just environmentally, you know, snowing, raining, potholes, crap, traffic. And then you come out here, and in the 70s, you know, it was 20 minutes from Burbank to Marina Del Rey. It was nothing. And, you know, now it's 20 minutes to get to the next traffic light. But it was great. I just want to know, like, I really was curious, how will it be different with just not being mad at the environment I'm in? You know, take away the weather, take away the crowds, take away the attitudes. And I was fine with everybody out here going, have a nice day. You know, I was fine with all the superficial, you know, because back there it was like, fuck you, not my problem. That's what you got back east, you know, not my problem, fuck you. But I'll take have a nice day over that.
Yeah. And
it's just much more pleasant. And that's why I was always after a pleasant and comfortable place to live, if you can do it. Easy to go the superficial route, but, you know, the same, you know, and I teach these classes, no matter where, what culture, whatever, no matter what time you lived in, what culture you're from, what your economic status is, we all, by the time we're 20-something years old, we all have already felt every emotion there is to feel. And we've all felt betrayed. We've all felt disappointed. We've all felt overjoyed. We've all felt fulfilled to some degree. We've all felt lonely. We've all felt sad. and the architecture for all those feelings is exactly the same. The intensity isn't the same, you know. What I might consider a betrayal, you know, if I gave you the biggest betrayal ever happened to me, that might not be the same as a betrayal that happened to somebody in government, or you know, two bandmates, you know, Hall and Oates are suing each other kind of thing. And it might not be the same as a betrayal of a high school kid who thought they had a ride somewhere and got ditched, but it's betrayal, no matter what the degree was. We all have that. We all have every emotion in us. So it's just, there's an immediate affinity with everybody when you know that. So, you know, East Coast, West Coast, Kazakhstan, Tokyo, Vietnam, San Diego, you know,
Ireland,
Dublin, yeah. Dublin, you know, we're all trying not to get disappointed. We're all trying not to, you know, we're all trying to get through the same way, and the same buffet table of emotions that's available to one of us is available to all of us. And everything else,
yes.
You know, clean sheets, stuff like that, you know, comfort. And so, yeah, here today was a rainy, shitty, cold winter day. And that meant putting on a pair of sweatpants and like a hoodie and a jacket over the hoodie to walk the dogs. That's it. You know, I think with the layers of stuff I had to put on, you know, those two winters in Cape Cod, I think I counted 17 things that I had to put on just to go outside for 20 minutes. And,
oh, yeah. That's so true, though, right?
You're in Antarctica in like 1912.
It's like, you know, it's not socks. Socks aren't one thing. The socks are two things. So we had four socks. You know, two sets of gloves, the scarf, you know, two hats. It was just incredible. It's like, it took me
longer. Remember the Wonder Bread?
Right. It took longer to get ready to go outside than it took to be outside.
And, yes. And, like when I'm going out after my kids and I have to like put boots on and blah, 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 I'm like, I just want to go out for 5 seconds. Because that's the way it is here at the moment. Because it's like 23 degrees. No,
oh, yeah.
Kids were only in school one day last week. One day out of five.
It's so cold.
Well, the Monday was a holiday. And then Tuesday they were out, Wednesday they were out, Thursday they were in, and then Friday they were out again. It was like, oh my God. And it was really cold. So like, they go out and play in the snow, but then 15 minutes later they come back in and it'd be all messy and all. It's like, so this is kind of playing into what you're saying here, Jeff. But like, yeah. But like where I come from, these conditions don't exist. We just had, you know, we just had our nice rain. That's all.
Yeah, I mean,
you're in Ireland.
My original little kids. It was Virginia, and we had to do all the bundling up. And you know, the summer was just so humid and everything. And then when I moved out here, my daughter was 8, and my son was 4, and he doesn't have any memory of back
Virginia.
East. With him, it was just
I didn't know that.
Walk around in shorts and a t-shirt, and that's life. And. Mm-hmm. That's what he thinks, you know, and that is what life is. What? Why the hell do you need to put on all this? So anyway, this has a lot to do with writing. Has a lot to do with
yeah, yeah. We're talking about weather.
I do want to say, since we were talking about male friendship, I was there was some French TV crew and
yeah, I'm like, we are really talking about friendship here. This is great.
And so yeah. They came to LA. They must have had some kind of grant or something. This French TV crew came to LA and they're interviewing people about love stories and romance. And so they interviewed me and they said, what was your favorite love scene? And I said, the last scene in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid is one of the most amazing love scenes I've ever seen. And it's between two heterosexual men. But that scene where they're talking about, they keep cutting to how many people, how many armies, and how many thousands and thousands of people are out there just waiting to take a shot at them the minute they show up. And they're in there and they're reloading and they're wounded and Redford's putting on his glove and they're talking about their plans for the next thing they're going to do, Australia, you know, and I knew you didn't want to hear about it, but I thought secretly you did. And they start talking about Australia. And first of all,
I've never seen that.
Oh, it's great film.
First of all, it's a lesson in subtext like you can't believe, because they're not
talking. Oh, I must see it.
They're not talking about Australia. They're saying, I love you. It's been a great ride together. I wouldn't have it any other way. We are about to die.
Yeah.
They never say we're about to die. They never admit that they're about to die. They know they're about to die. They know how many people are out there. There's no way out of this. Their lives have led to this point. And it's one of the most beautiful, tender, funny, still very masculine, you know, but the feminine side of masculine, because the way Newman and Redford pull it off, and they are pretty much a bickering couple through the whole thing. That's what William Goldman did that was different. He had a bickering couple, but it was two guys, and they just bicker through the whole movie, through the whole story. And everything's always got to be perfect with you, you know, and all that's, you know, all these lines. But to me, that was one of the most memorable and incredible love scenes in all of film. And it was just two guys saying goodbye. They knew they're going to die in a minute. It was like,
suicide by South
America.
Yeah, they go to Bolivia. The entire Bolivian army comes out.
Dos Yankees, dos, solamente dos. They kept saying it was only two people, and they had rooftops. It was the entire Bolivian army and police had gathered in this one place to wipe out these two guys. And
do they die?
Well, we don't give away the ending, Danny, do we?
You gotta watch the movie. You gotta see Butch Cassidy.
Okay, I'm gonna watch it.
But anyway, there's no better expression of male love than, first of all, that movie, but also that final scene. And because here they are, they can't say it. Two women might say, it's been such a, you know, I love you so much and it's been great and I wouldn't, you know, now that we're gonna die. But guys wouldn't say that, you know.
Did you see on HBO The Last of Us? Did you see that show that was just on the
list? No, I haven't. I keep hearing about it, but no.
Well, it's based on a video game. The Last of Us.
It's a video game.
Uh-oh.
It's based on a video game.
Old guy alert. Doesn't know this stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, no.
No, and it's set after like a zombie apocalypse and stuff. But it's actually, to me, it's a love story between a man and his surrogate daughter, because he loses his daughter at the start. And then he has to take on this other little girl to bring her across the country in order to get all these adventures. And then they grow to love each other at the end. And at the end, they love each other. So to me, that was a fantastic love story in a different way. Much along the same lines of what Jeff was saying, except it was just from 2023. But yeah, it's a lot of bumps along the road, and season two is going to be rough. But yeah, that was a really beautiful love story, I thought.
So, you know, I'm trying to think of other movies that really did, you know, male friendship. For some reason, I just thought of North Dallas 40 with, you know, Mac Davis and Nick Nolte, the friendship they had. But Band of Brothers, that whole series.
Band of Brothers. That whole series. If you
talk about male friendship and male, you know, love and loyalty, nothing like Soldiers for that. And Band of Brothers was beautiful that
way. Yeah. Black Hawk Down was good for that too. At the end, they say you fight for the man beside you, and that's where we all do it.
Say it now.
You've got a decent amount wrong.
So wrong that your dog won't even stay in the same room.
Exactly. That dog is like, no, sorry, Annie, no thanks.
I have to watch that.
Yeah, my kids are barking in the background.
All right. Well, I'll let you guys go. Anyway, this has been a wonderful conversation. I'm going to write a wonderful article about it. So, such a pleasure. And happy Valentine's Day to everybody.
A Photoshop.
I'm going to be an article. Photoshop.
Okay. All right, you guys. Thank you.
All right. Bye.